Welcome to Rusk, Insights on Rehabilitation Medicine, a top podcast featuring interviews with thought leaders in the field of PM&R from Rusk Rehabilitation at NYU Langone Medical Center and other prominent rehab medicine institutions. Your host for these interviews is Dr. Tom Elwood. He will take you behind the scenes to look at what is transpiring in the exciting world of rehabilitation research and clinical services through the eyes of those involved in making dynamic breakthroughs in healthcare. So listen, learn, and enjoy.
Welcome back to part three of an interview with Dr. Elizabeth Sandel. So Dr. Sandel, welcome back, and let's begin where we left off at the end of the second part of the interview.
Well, thank you.
In February of 2016, you made a presentation at the annual meeting of the Association of Academic Physiatrists on the topic of diagnosis after concussion, can we reach the goal? Please specify what goal you had in mind on that occasion.
Well, I think this relates to what I had mentioned before, which is this question of whether we can reach the goal of diagnosis by some combination of incorporation of history taking, physical examination, and then biomarkers. So whether they be laboratory tests or neuroimaging, can we reach the goal of diagnosis? We're not there yet, but I am very optimistic that we will be able to reach the goal at some point. We've got a lot of people working on the research behind this, and I think hopefully within 5 years or so, we will have much better ways of making the diagnosis.
The term mild traumatic brain injury often appears in the professional literature as being synonymous with the term concussion. Repeated head injuries have been linked to the condition chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. MRI techniques and blood tests appear to show promise as diagnostic tools to explore the CTE pathophysiology. What's the present status of work in that area?
Well, it's quite interesting and rapidly increasing, I think, across the country and actually in other centers in Europe and other countries. You know, the first studies of repetitive concussions were in boxers. And the long-term irreversible and progressive aftermath of brain injury in boxers was, of course, first described just by watching boxers who were staggering in the ring. This was called the punch drunk syndrome. And later the term dementia pugilistica was applied. This is about a century ago. So we knew about this phenomenon a long time ago. But the term chronic traumatic encephalopathy was a term that was developed by Bennett Amalu, the neuropathologist, who's featured, of course, in the film Concussion. And he described what he saw in the brain of Pittsburgh Steeler Mike Webster and decided to really call it out in terms of what he saw microscopically as chronic traumatic encephalopathy. So this is the mechanism by which brain injury leads to the process of CTE, and it involves tau protein, neurofibrillary tangles, which are also present, by the way, in Alzheimer's disease. And we don't know exactly how this process occurs. We do know that this pathology seems to be connected with the perivascular structures. So you get these little micro hemorrhages and injury to axons. We know about all that. So it seems to be in these areas that we call perivascular regions where this phenomenon takes place. And then there's an inflammatory cascade. We know about that as well. But I wanted to just mention two research efforts that are ongoing and certainly multifaceted, both at Boston University, that's Ann McKee and colleagues, where there's a brain bank, but also NIH just awarded to the University of Pennsylvania researchers, who I know from my time at Penn, Douglas Smith and John Trojanowski, And they've been studying traumatic brain injury and neurodegenerative conditions like Alzheimer's for many decades. They have just been awarded a grant to study post-mortem brains and to look at the differences and similarities between the brains of individuals diagnosed with CTE, with traumatic brain injury, and Alzheimer's disease and other neurological conditions or neurodegenerative conditions. So I think that that's going to be really interesting research to watch. I think it'll be about 200 cases, and they'll obviously be correlating what was found clinically with what is seen in the brains of these former patients. And so that's research that will really be helpful. In the meantime, I guess we have to really stay tuned because we do see our professional and amateur athletes deciding the risk of playing these collision sports is not worth it. And by the way, the Pop Warner football numbers are also dropping. So the youngest people playing football, those numbers are decreasing.
On the topic of cases, please describe one in which you've been involved with a patient that proved to be highly interesting, challenging, and rewarding from the standpoint of its eventual outcome.
Okay, well, this one is an easy question because I have so many cases that I could talk about. But I think apropos what I've talked about, the need for careful history taking, as well as the physical examination, of course, neuroimaging studies, and hopefully other biomarkers, that's going to be really important. But this case will, I think, hit home the concept that we can't give up history taking. So this is a patient that I admitted to a rehabilitation center, and it was reported by the neurosurgeon that he was malingering, that he was exaggerating, at least exaggerating, the degree of his deficits. He had been injured at a construction site. The ceiling had collapsed on him, and he had some cognitive deficits, and he had what appeared to be paralysis. And he was actually treated for an acute spinal cord injury because he was weak in his arms and legs, and they felt that they needed to treat him for an acute spinal cord injury. When he was admitted to our center and I was doing the admission, it seemed as though his strength was pretty good when he was lying in bed, but he could barely sit up on the edge of the bed and he couldn't stand. So it was a little inconsistent. But fast forward, the patient eventually revealed that he had served in the military, and horrific events that he had observed and participated in the front lines were still the source of nightmares and flashbacks. And he had never told anyone about this. Even his family did not know. They knew that he never wanted to go to war movies, but they didn't know the extent of what he had seen and participated in. So we really use the same approach we use in inpatient rehabilitation with all patients, but having this pre-injury knowledge was so crucial. And everybody on the team, you know, was able to participate, certainly see the relationship between the pre-injury person that he was and the post-injury person he was. And he walked out of our center. He was extremely grateful. And we referred him to a local VA facility for continued treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder, which we had diagnosed. And he came back many months later to thank us. So very, very gratifying, but I think it really tells the correct story about how patients should have individualized treatment that takes into account their whole life story.
Yeah, that's an excellent anecdote. Thank you for providing that. I'm going to close by thanking you for the valuable information and insights that you provided regarding brain injuries in today's interview. The role that you're playing in rehabilitation should prove highly interesting for our listeners to this podcast series. So again, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Thank you again for joining us. You can learn more about Rusk at nyulangone.org/Rusk. Also, be sure to follow this podcast on Twitter @RuskPodcast.